Hi, welcome to Locos in Ostra. I'm Edward.
I'm Noah.
And today we'll be covering 2009's 500 Days of Summer, directed by Mark Webb, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel. Yeah.
Okay, so, when was the first time you saw this movie?
Oh, it was a long time ago. I think it's probably like maybe 3 years. I mean, I rewatched it quite recently. I think I watched it because it was on Disney Plus and like it's all done alphabetically and then it's a number.
It's always the first one that comes up.
It's the first one. So I think I ended up just like, I think I'd also seen it on like social media as well. And I was just asked my dad, like, do you want to watch this?
Yeah.
So we watched it. It was a while ago. And then I watched it recently because it felt topical because it was Valentine's Day coming up. Yeah. So
The first time I saw this, it was, last year.
Last year.
And it was like my family had gone on a trip to Paris. And I don't know why. I was probably just feeling like watching it. But I decided to watch 10 Things I Hate About You
again.
And it was really good. Like, really, really good. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, let's watch this. Let's try and find another movie like that. And then we get back and then I'm looking through Disney Plus and I see this movie. Yeah. It was really a choice for me because I was choosing which one to watch. It was a choice between High Fidelity, a movie I still haven't seen, and apparently it's quite good.
Yeah.
And I'll probably get around to it. And 500 Days of Summer. And this movie just looks a lot more interesting, especially the trailer.
Yeah.
I watched the trailer and it was just like, this is not a love story. I was like, huh, okay, this looks quite interesting. So, you know, that was the first and last time I saw this movie.
I think, in terms of kind of things about it, it's a striking movie. Like, there's a lot of kind of artistic elements to it, from having like a narrator that only turns up for like a maximum screen time of 7 minutes.
I could
have
sworn that was Morgan Freeman. Am I crazy?
I don't know who it is. We should find out. But
I know every narrator in the movie sounds like Morgan Freeman to
everybody.
Me.
I think that's just everyone's inspiration, honestly, ever since...
It was like after watching Bruce Almighty, I genuinely just think he's just in everything. Okay, it's not.
It's not. It's Richard McGonagall. I don't know how to.
That's a mouthful.
The cinematography is really cool. I like the color. Costume-wise, Zooey Deschanel is always wearing blue because apparently it brought out the blue in her eyes more in the scenes. So she's always wearing blue, or blue is in the scene somewhere. Joseph Gordon-Levitt wears really like browns and stuff, which kind of reflects his character a lot. The music's really good in this film.
The soundtrack, I remember as soon as it finished, I went to the soundtrack to go.
Even better, I would say, is the references in the film to music. Because when you actually look at the soundtrack that's like published on like Spotify and stuff, it's missing a lot of songs that are like referenced or like said in the film.
Yeah.
Like Spearmint turns on.
Like what they do.
And the Smiths isn't on the...
With Spotify, it's a really weird thing what they do. They take the original score of it. And the original score is still really good in this movie. I can't remember who it's done by.
I mean, there's not much of it, but it's...
There's not much of it. But like the main theme, it is good. But what Spotify does, they just put the original score in there. So like you're looking for the soundtrack, look for all the songs, and it's just not there. So if you want to find that, you just have to go on YouTube and look.
It's a good, I mean, obviously a central focus of this film is music from the Smiths, who are really good. They talk about the Beatles, they talk about Spearmint. He wears 3 separate Joy Division shirts across the film, which is weird, but I mean, like, 3 times is an odd choice.
3 different.
Two of the same, 1 different, but all on different days. So it's like a conscious choice.
Yeah.
But they never play any Joy Division. I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the Pixies... All sorts.
So what do you think of Joseph Gordon-Levitt? Like,
I think he's really solid in this movie, honestly. I think...
Like, genuinely, as an actor,
I think he's really good. I mean, he always brings something to the table. I mean, from Dark Knight Rises, Inception, and 500 Days of Summer, which is kind of what I'd seen him from. I mean, I'd also seen him from Twas the Night Before, which is like a Christmas movie, but I don't really count that because it's like... It's with Seth Rogen. Yeah. So, like, that kind
of... Yeah, I've only seen him in... 10 Things I Hate About You, which he was really good in. He did the voice for Jim Hawkins in Treasure Planet.
Yeah.
Which Treasure Planet, you've got to see Treasure Planet. It is quite underrated. And he was also in the live action Pinocchio as Jiminy Cricket. So we all make mistakes. I don't know why he's in that.
But I mean, he's a solid actor.
He is a solid actor.
It's a different performance. It's never like, I know we've talked before about Jim Carrey having... like very similar performances, and it's always being like Jim Carrey. I mean, other than he's like often depressed or looks depressed in his movies, which you can't really blame a guy for looking depressed. Like, it's not really his fault.
Yeah.
He just always does, I think. And obviously that really works for this movie. I think Zooey Deschanel is also really good in this movie. I mean, the whole cast is good.
Yeah. Zooey Deschanel, like, because, like, the thing with her, I bet she's a good actress. I bet
she's kind of annoying in this movie, honestly.
Before we get into that whole thing, like, I just want to say, like, she is constantly typecast as the Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Yeah, and we've talked about Manic Pixie Dream Girls before being a whole, like, thing.
Yeah,
and we've already done it twice, and it's now three times.
That's our trilogy
wrapped up, guys. What was the first one? Scott Pilgrim.
There we go. We've got our trilogy.
We'll try not to talk about them again, but no promises.
Yeah, she's in the Jim Carrey film Yes Man.
Yeah, she is, which is great.
It's nice. It's nothing amazing, but it's nice. But she's essentially doing that Manic Pixie Dream Girl thing.
Yeah, I think there's just something about the way
Elf. I didn't even realize she was in that the first time I saw it. You couldn't tell. I promise you. I'm not sure if she's wearing a wig or something. She might be. And then she's in the TV series New Girl, which I heard was pretty good. I could not get into it personally because it was just, I just felt like, okay, I've seen this before. I've seen this Manic Pixie Dream Girl thing again. And yeah, so what?
The actor of the film is in Alvin and the Chipmunks as Simon.
That's
mental.
A career-defining performance right there.
That's incredible.
Thank God.
Again,
we all make mistakes.
Every actor's made a mistake.
Even Zooey Deschanel, what was she in? Harold and the Purple Crayon.
That was her.
With, what's his name? Zachary Levy. Zachary Levy is actively trying not to, like, derail his career after
Shazam.
It's kind of sad. I'm not even going to lie.
Yeah, I think it's just something about, she's got this weird, like, bug-eyed kind of thousand meters there. Even when she's looking at someone in a film.
And they talk about it in this film, where he goes through the description of what she
looks like.
Yeah,
she just kind of stares at things the whole time. Like, exactly. I stare off into space a lot, but, like, it's really weird. She'll be having a conversation, and she'll just zone out mid-conversation.
Yeah, I know. And this movie has, like, a surprisingly small budget. It's just 7.5.
Yeah, so interesting.
Yeah.
Mark Webber directed this film, as we've said before. His next film after this would be The Amazing Spider-Man.
That is incredible.
And his budget tripled.
Yeah, that is, I want to say it's about 200
million. 200 million, something like that. It more than tripled. Like, it was
personally,
huge.
Not a great fan of those movies. I can't get into, 230. Jesus. And I don't really think you can see the money because you've got the lizard, and
it looks amazing. Don't even lie.
He's got like this, I swear he's got like human teeth as well. And it's just,
but that's
like,
that's the design. That's not the, and also like they actually got stuntmen to do the Spider-Man stunts and then they would then 3D like animate them in. So that costs a lot of money. And the new, everything that's like New York in that movie was shot in a like warehouse, and they remade New York, not exactly, but they remade a bit of New York so they could like shoot at any time, any day without having to worry about cutting things off.
Exactly.
And like, I find that like a really cool like commitment.
I know, like, okay, we'll get just a little bit of a tangent about The Amazing Spider-Man. They did not leave enough time between the end of the Maguire movies, which didn't end on the best note. I don't hate Spider-Man 3. Like, you know, emo Peter Parker is one of the greatest things that cinema's ever given to us. And like, but you realize they only left a 4-year gap between the end of that one and this new one. So they didn't have enough time to create this new universe.
But I think you need to appreciate the art by just not like thinking about the circumstances of it and just the actual film.
And as a film, it's
the second
like,
one is terrible. Don't get me wrong. There's moments of it where it's really good, but it is atrocious.
I couldn't even get to the second one. I was like, I watched the first. I was like, this series just isn't for me.
I think Andrew Garfield's the greatest one. Anyway, we need to get back on track before we like just rename the episode Amazing Spider-Man.
So Mark Webb, good director.
A hit or miss director.
Now he's directing the live action Snow White.
Well, we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
It looks
terrible. Again, we all make mistakes.
This one's a whole lot of we all make mistakes.
Yeah, this who else has made mistakes?
Okay, but the color, a lot of them. The color grading in this film is really good. I like the like use of colors. Yeah. I like the personally, I really like the non-linear storytelling.
Yeah,
where it kind of jumps around.
But I think it's not as it's pretend. It's more obvious than Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, because Eternal Sunshine, the way it does it.
You have to Eternal Sunshine is one of those movies you have to be paying attention when you watch it.
Mm, but it's a lot of substance in that, and I think this has kind of made it into a squash instead of just really strong juice.
I know, but yeah, this is it. This is if you didn't get too into Eternal Sunshine, this is just an easier movie to watch because it's just like
the outfits in this movie are just incredible.
Yeah, and this is I just want to put out that I don't know what happened to film posters, but this has one really good film poster, the main one. Yeah. And then you've got the one with the t-shirt, which is, in my opinion, one of the worst posters I've ever seen. I hate it. It's disgusting. It is looking at it. It makes me... It's the one on Letterboxd as well. So whenever I see this movie, I'm like, ew, look at that. What
There's
is
actually
that?
A bunch of variant posters that are arguably better.
Exactly. And the one that they keep using is on the one on the DVD as well. Like, geez, it's nasty. It's disgusting, you know? It doesn't properly represent this movie
all right,
at all.
We've talked about the poster.
All right. Should we talk about the...
Should we talk about the obvious question that you probably all chose this episode for?
Mm.
Who was right, Tom or Summer? It's an argument that can be had. I would argue it's this generation's version of, like, the Titanic question, who fit on the door? So
I've never
they can fit on the door, but it would sink with their weight.
Really?
That's the answer to the question.
I've never seen
James Cameron said it. Problem solved.
So they both couldn't have lived.
No.
Oh, well, the ending's been spoiled for me enough where like, yeah, I can talk about
it. They both
this.
Couldn't have fit, no. Apparently there was space, but if there was both of them, the weight of the buoyancy of the thingy, it would have sunk.
Really?
So what's your opinion? Tom, Summer,
okay,
somewhere in between, neither was right.
No. Like, okay, when I first finished this movie, I was like, oh, that's Summer, you know, what is she doing? Like, that's unfair to Tom. It's like, what did he do wrong? I was with Tom because like, yeah, all he did was love her and she rejected him. As time has gone on, I realized, oh, shoot. Because I've watched videos on the subject as well.
Yeah, no, same.
And it's like, huh. She obviously wasn't committed about this relationship and she didn't really want to be in it. And I think she could have done a better job at making that known to Tom and just said, yeah, I'm not really passionate about this relationship. But like, yeah, she didn't want to be in it. And Tom feels forced. Like where he says, you know, I have a say in this relationship too, and I say we're a couple. That going back to it, it's and when I first watched it, I was like, yeah, exactly. You tell her, but now it's like, oh no, you don't. You don't. This is a thing. This is a choice between two people, and it's yeah. And what do you think?
I think it's not necessarily that one's right and one's wrong. Obviously, that's like a very avoid problems answer.
Yeah.
But I think she's very indecisive as a character, Summer, and obviously being the manic pixie dream girl, that's going to happen. But like, there's times in the film where you feel like she wants it to be serious, and then there's times where she kind of is very distant. And I think for a guy like Tom, who, no offense, is very stupid in the film, like he doesn't have the mental capacity to understand like what's going on, needs one answer.
Just like, yeah, he's kind of lost in this movie because like, I think...
And he's also in love. Like,
exactly.
I mean, that's...
But it's the kind of thing where, like, and this is happens to a lot of people, I'm very sure, but it's like his idea of love has been presented through movies and television.
The Smiths.
Yeah, The Smiths. And that's why when you have that sequence after he first gets laid, it's like...
It's real. I love
why,
that sequence.
I know.
That is so fun.
I was enjoying it, and then it just kind of clicked with me. Oh, shoot. Oh, my God. He's an idiot. He's an absolute... Because it's like, oh, yeah, this is obviously how this character would think. He'd look into the mirror and he'd see Han Solo. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but I think to a certain extent, like...
He'd think of it as a big, like, Broadway-style musical, like, moment, you know? There'd be animated characters flying through the air. That's just the kind of person he is because he doesn't probably get the concept of love because it's like...
I don't think she understands either. And I think the note that kind of... My problem with kind of... Summer as like being right or wrong is I think there's kind of this aspect where she sort of she doesn't know what she wants either. And so she's kind of getting annoyed at Tom because he knows what he wants, right? He has an end goal in mind. And as misplaced and dodgily thought out that point is, at least he knows what he wants. Summer yeah. kind of bounces around with what she wants, and like she'll change. She's got like mood swings, you know, like she at the beginning of the relationship, she's very much like, I love Ringo. But then towards the end, when he's trying to like make things better and talking about Ringo, and she doesn't like, care anymore.
She's kind of indifferent. I think she doesn't really... it's like, yeah, just that's my issue. Like, okay, if you don't like him, can you just tell him?
So, yeah, because like she's kind of dragging him on along with him for the like comfort of like having someone around instead of being like left alone.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. But what do you think of the like the expectation versus reality?
I love that. I think that's genuinely one of the best done scenes I've seen in a long time. I think the music is like very cleverly placed. I think the way that from the beginning it's slightly offset. Even though they both just go up the stairs and knock on the door, and before any of the like expectations happen, he takes slightly longer in the reality version to the expectation, and so he's already behind on what he's expecting.
I know, it's the kind of thing where like in your average rom-com,
you wouldn't have that.
Like the expectation would be the thing that happens, in my opinion.
What
like think about like your rom-coms of the 90s and how even like I don't want to pick on 10 Things I Hate About You because I really like it, but like yeah, I can see that happening in that movie. Yeah. And you think about your like your Pretty Woman and your
and it all works out in the end.
Exactly, like Hitch and your 10 what's it called? How to Lose a Guy in 10 days.
Like it all works out. Yeah. And, you know, like,
doesn't make them bad movies because cinema is kind of an escapism medium. Yeah. You don't need to take things too seriously.
What's kind of good about this movie, and I think we've moved away and I think we've settled on a good point, which is that neither of them are right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, both of them are right. It's a weird scenario that's going to keep arguing for a long time. But I like that this movie is... it's a rom-com and it's a love letter to rom-coms.
Yeah.
But it also says... It's critical
of them. Yeah.
Why did you make me think it was all going to work out when it's obviously not?
Well, no. Because like at the very beginning of the movie, they're like, this is not a love story. They tell you from the start that things aren't really going to work out.
That's what I'm saying.
So it's like,
they tell you it's unrealistic. The trailer
even said it. So it's like, it's not like we tricked you. You knew what you were getting into.
And I find when I watch it is that I fall into the trap. I know they explicitly say it and Summer explicitly says, and I should know better. But I fall into the trap of still thinking it's going to work, which makes that scene so much more devastating of just it not working.
Yeah, it not working. And it's like, but like you think about like, yeah, it wasn't going to happen. Because in your mind, the first time you watch it or even other times that you watch it, you're thinking like, yeah, like, of course, yeah, this is what's going to happen. The expectation thing, that's what's going to happen. I've seen movies before. Yeah. I've seen movies. I know what's going to happen. You know, this movie can't trick me. And then boom, it's like, no, that's not how it's going to work. That's not how it works. And, you know, that was just a really interesting take on it.
Yeah.
Because that was the first time I'd seen anything like that before.
I'd say as well, I think we're going to talk, if you don't mind, briefly about the character of Autumn at the end of the film. I like, in a way, that there's...
I don't know how I felt when I first...
It's open to interpretation. I think some people have interpreted that it's like a full circle moment and that Tom's now, like, mature enough that he'll be able to, like, blossom in the relationship. And other people view it as it's kind of... it's going to happen again.
Yeah. No, for me, it was like, okay, this guy... did not learn anything from this thing. This is just round two for him, you know. This is the second go around. Let's, you know.
And they say that it's happened before. When he's smashing on the plates, they're like, it's Amanda Henner all over again. And in a certain way, the whole film is just that as well. When they, at the beginning, they talk about any, like, links to people in, like, most movies do, where they're like, any links to people is purely fictional and accidental. Especially you. And then they call out a girl who broke up with the writer at the beginning of the film.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Jeez.
And it's like the whole film is just an elaborate way of saying like, I've moved on. You haven't.
Exactly.
Screw you.
That might be true. I have not checked. But it's like, yeah, I see this ending. And it's like, it doesn't make me angry, but it's like, huh, okay, this guy obviously hasn't changed that much by the end.
I think it also depends. A lot of people are going to watch this movie in a Tom kind of mentality.
Yeah, and a lot of people
where you're like
have,
romantic.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue. Like, when most people watch it, they side with Tom because they have someone or they've experienced something where they kind of see the feeling Tom has towards it. And some people are going to watch it in a summer state. You know, maybe they've just been broken up with, or they've never experienced something like that before, or like they don't really understand the emotion. And they're going to side with Summer and think this guy's clingy, he's annoying, you know, he's loud, and fair enough. And I think this film is very open to kind of interpretation. And that makes the ending all the more like clever.
I know.
Because the people who watch it from a Summer perspective are going to think, you know, well, he's just going to make the same mistake again. And then those people are going to have learned their lesson that, you know, like, everything he's done wrong, don't take that into your relationships.
Exactly.
And people who come at it from a Tomic perspective are going to think, you know, well, he's learned and he's going to, you know, it's going to go better for him this time. And then they know that everything he did in that relationship is wrong as well. And if you want to move on, then you have to take that learning. And so for everyone, it's kind of a like a learning curve.
Yeah, for me, it was like, even I was watching it the first time I watched it, I was watching it in a Tom perspective. And even when I was watching it like that, I was like, oh, shoot, this guy is, he obviously hasn't learned anything by the end of this. So it was the kind of thing where, like, I even knew that, oh, okay, this guy.
It can change your opinion on, like, I'm not going to say, like, change your opinion on love, but, like, it can change your opinion
on
love.
No, it can. I think so, yeah.
It's a very powerful movie.
Yeah, I know.
And it's very real, is what I like.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you can watch this movie in two different, like,
perspectives. And even more, really, because you could see it from Tom's friends, where you think Tom is a little bit silly, but you also think that Summer is like wrong as well. And then you can see it from every single character's perspective, which means you can watch this, you know, probably 500 times over and over again until, you know, you like have the perfect image of the film. But
yeah,
I think, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the box office. So in terms of box office, this was the 91st highest grossing movie of 2009, which might sound low, and it is, but it's like, you gotta keep in mind that 2009 was a pretty stacked year. Like, you've got Harry Potter, Half-Blood Prince, Up, Twilight, you've got Avatar, The Hangover, Ice Age 3, because of course there's a third one. And then you've got Fast and Furious, Transformers. So it's a pretty stacked year. And compared to its budget, how much did it make? It made like 6 times more than its budget. So it was, when you talk about how profitable it was, this definitely was a very profitable movie. I can't really understand like the mentality of them going, huh, okay, we've got Mark Webb.
Because
he directed this small movie that made enough money, huh? Let's give him $230 million to make
because
a Spider-Man movie.
What they wanted.
Like, at least Sam Raimi, he had made The Evil Dead. Like, you
but
know.
I think. I watched a video about The Amazing Spider-Man because I'm a big fan. And it's also a point that I wanted to get to about like 500 Days of Summer in general is he makes movies that are very honest and also very emotionally real. And when you watch this movie, it's not an unrealistic perception of love overall.
Which is good for this movie. But it doesn't work for a Spider-Man movie.
That's what they wanted for Spider-Man at the time. If Sony wanted something, because 500 Days of Summer was really popular with a younger age base, and they wanted to take Spider-Man away from all the people who'd seen the Raimi and do something very new and kind of set the next generation up to enjoy it.
Which it reminds me of the whole thing that they were doing like after Schumacher had finished like Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, where like they were like, okay, let's scale it back. Let's make Batman more serious with Christopher Nolan. But for Batman, it kind of makes a lot more sense because he is a very serious character. When you have Spider-Man, it's like, huh, okay, we have this teenager who's always like sprouting catchphrases and stuff like that and going against the goofy villains like Doc Ock and, you know, the Green Goblin. And it's like, no, you can't really do the same thing. They obviously wanted their own Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, but...
And Sony does not have a clue about what they're doing.
They don't know what to do with Spider-Man. But
they don't know what to do with Spider-Man.
They're not entirely wrong with the emotional thing because there's a lot of Spider-Man kind of comics and stories where the whole like catchphrase thing started off with Stanley like as his personality, but it was really shallow is the problem. It's if you have this like funny guy who, so
yeah, but you kind
of he's really
that.
Raw yeah. inside is the idea, and he uses this comedy and catchphrase to kind of like make the people around him feel happier. Because the thing with Batman is like he's really depressing.
Exactly.
And, like, working on so, a team yeah. sucks. So you have Spider-Man.
It makes more sense to but, give it. It made less sense. I mean, like when you're doing like the Adam West TV show, it makes sense because it's obviously a satire. When you're doing the Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, they want to be like Burton's films, but they're too goofy to actually work. So it doesn't work. When you have Christopher Nolan's films, it works because you just have they're really serious. Batman's a really serious character. Here we go. With Spider-Man, everybody already knows Spider-Man as a really kind of this kind of goofy, kind of crazy kid. And it's like, it doesn't make that much sense to me to like kind of scale it back. I mean, I understand the thinking, but I don't want to get into Sony and they're just
terrible, terrible
like,
marketing.
What have they been doing? They've been doing Venom and they're doing
Venom.
I did not know what happened to Morbius. I didn't realize it bombed. They released it again and it bombed again.
Just bring the fans what they want and make the Amazing Spider-Man 4. Like,
in my opinion,
just please.
Like, Marvel,
stop.
Marvel isn't doing great right now, but I'd rather if they just gave, like,
Spider-Man
Tom Holland
actual attention.
I'd rather they just gave the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, just give it to like
just sell it back
Disney,
to Marvel. Oh
Disney,
my god,
like,
please.
Because like they have no clue what they're doing there. So
So
there you go.
Did you see Joseph Gordon-Levitt's
tweets
about
He's a summer supporter. I was shocked.
Really? I've not I didn't
he was
know
on a talk
that.
Show and it's the one where they have
I
cups.
Think I did, actually, yeah, I did.
And
see.
They do strongly agree, strongly disagree. And they're like, Tom was right. And he puts on strongly disagree. All of the Tom fans were like betrayed. But I don't know. I think he's quite a mature guy. And I think he's at the point of his life where he can kind of see from it. But I think as we've said, that's the beauty of this film is that anyone can watch it and take different things away from it. It's like very good philosophy.
Yeah, like you get different.
Did it win any awards? We usually check this.
Well, no, obviously the Academy were like, ugh, look at this movie. That
it's
youth,
a rom com. Get away
like.
From me.
No, it's a rom com. Get away. Like, oh, the youth likes it. And of course, you know, the Academy is full of stuffy white men who don't watch movies like this, but they do watch like period dramas and they do watch biopics. So, you know,
I had 17
obviously,
wins.
Well, like for like these little, what like look down, you'd probably find like the Kids' Choice Award or something. That's just.
Okay, American Cinema Award nominee, Critics' Choice Award nominee.
And, you know, like we looked at Man on the Moon.
It
Eternal
won the Florida Films Critic. Okay, so.
Yeah, we looked at Man on the Moon, Eternal Sunshine.
The Golden Globes.
Yeah, and we saw like how Jim Carrey, like, okay, the industry doesn't like giving Jim Carrey the Oscar, but they will give him a Golden Globe. It's kind of the same thing here.
Yeah.
Like, they recognize it's a good film, but they recognize it's not prestigious enough.
So who did win 2009? I imagine it was a lot of Avatar because the Oscars feel so bad about the first winner being a Nazi that they have to give everything to the F.
No, but this was the year. After
apparently that's true. I'm not sure if that's true. Apparently the first Oscar winner, when it was a small group, was a dog. And they were like, that's not good. So they gave it to the next
person.
Oh,
it might have been Rin Tin Tin. I think that's what they called the dog. Yes.
And then they were like, no, that's not going to, we can't like let that slide. So they gave it to the next best.
Oh, this is for the year before. You want to put 2010. But 2008 is really interesting because this was the year that the Academy snubbed Wall-E and The Dark Knight. So, like, after this, they increased the number of movies that could be given Best Picture nominations. Yeah, so that's why you see films like Avatar and Up and Toy Story 3 getting nominations. Like,
okay, so the winner of Actor in a Leading Role was Jeff Bridges.
Wait, are you on the right one? Because this is, might still be 2009.
2010. Oh, yeah, 2010. 87. Okay, so Jeff Bridges won over Morgan Freeman and Jeremy Renner for Actor in a Leading Role.
I have
Morgan Freeman, Invictus. Jeremy Renner, The Hurt Locker, which we need to do. I love that movie.
I've not seen
He's
any
so
of
good in that. That's
I had no one. I had no idea.
Yeah, Christoph Waltz for Inglourious Basterds seems fair enough.
Sandra Bullock won for The Blind Side. Are you gagging me right now?
Instead of Meryl Streep for Julie and Juliet, which
The Blind Side is not even a good movie to start with. Yeah.
Monique.
Oh, I don't.
Penelope Cruz.
If it did, I don't know. Fantastic Mr. Fox should have won for Best Animated Feature any day of the week. It's just
yeah,
like yes. Up is nice, but it's not like as
Avatar
good as that.
Wins art direction, which Avatar yeah. wins cinematography.
You know, fair enough. No, Avatar, as much as I don't really care about it, like at all.
Catherine Bigelow winning best director for The Hurt Locker is very much fair enough.
And really, they were married. That is great. That is absolutely great.
That is a really fun. How did okay? No, actually, no, art winning original completely, score is fair.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Actually, Princess of the Frog got 2 nominations. Okay.
The Hurt Locker winning Best Picture. Actually, I love.
But you
that.
Can see how much more they've got this year. They took it from 5 to 10 because everybody was like, "Why didn't you nominate Wall-E? Why didn't you nominate The Dark Knight?"
So, Up was nominated for Best Picture.
I think that's fair enough. Like,
I have a controversial view where it's the 15 minutes of Up. The first 15 minutes is brilliant.
Yeah, I get
and
it.
And then it overshadows the rest of the movie, which is just an average Disney adventure.
Yeah, but like,
maybe slightly better.
I'd rather Fantastic Mr. Fox got nominated. But it's always good to see an animated film get a Best Picture nomination.
But it's just like a Disney adventure template, but with senior people.
Yeah, like, and
the first 15 minutes, don't get me wrong, it is really so good. With the score and the like, growing up thing is great, but then it's just kind of average.
Personally, Pixar's film beforehand, like you've had The Incredibles and Ratatouille and Wall-E, those ones should have got the Best Picture nomination, but that was before this, you know,
And then sound mixing and then visual effects is Avatar. And I don't think, well, that being said, District 9's visual effects is really good.
Oh, I think, no, but Avatar, that completely just.
Well, yeah, no, obviously.
Yeah, like obviously, it's Avatar. Like.
But like, it's really good.
That obviously does look good.
District 9's quite interesting. I might have to get around to watching it. It's these aliens like land on Earth and they segregate the aliens from, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of VFX and practicality, have you seen the movie The Creator with John David Washington?
No.
They used, up until then, if you were playing a VFX character, you had to have motion capture suits. But then if you were kind of an extra, so for example, a movie like District 9 would have that, where you're running around as the character.
Yeah.
You can't really control the variables. So your VFX character might get in a bad shot or look bad. And then you've wasted a lot of money on something that basically doesn't happen. So the creator shot everyone in outfit without any mocap and then added the motion capture after
that would
the shot
look better.
So that you then have the to choose from, say, 100 people, you can pick who has the best run or the best kind of movement in the scene without wasting any actors or money.
Yeah, we don't, apart from the Avatar movies, I don't think we see that much motion capture. I mean,
not anymore, no. It's like, not more
personally,
3D.
It has its merits. Yeah. Like, it has its merits, but it's just, like, I really like The Adventures of Tintin. A Christmas Carol is fine. Like, you know, the Polar Express is also fine. I haven't seen Beowulf. I'm not going anywhere near Marsney's mom. So it's like, it can look good. I think nowadays it'd look good. I just don't think. Huh? God, that is incredible how that's 2001.
Honestly, like, I do genuinely think that, like, if done well and not entirely, 3D can look really good.
It can, and
but
it's like
it's but done.
I think we're at a. I think we're at a point where like we can move past the uncanny valley of it. Because Polar Express and A Christmas Carol and Marsney's Mum's definitely that one. Like Beowulf, they all have this uncanny valley this to them, you know. And that's probably why that they kind of stopped doing it. No, like it's mocap. Mocap?
Yeah, they looks uncanny.
Yeah, mocap. Yeah, you've got Avatar.
But I feel like the point is that Avatar doesn't look the same. I think Avatar's VFX are really well done. But yeah, there's some kind of
oh, it's fantastic. It's
for movement.
Did you guys know that Tom Hanks plays every character in the Polar Express?
Yeah.
And the main character is literally called Boy. I love the behind the scenes of this movie way more than I like the
movie. If it's got more people than intended, it is just. But apparently there's other actors then.
I think he was.
Oh, does he not play? Their name is Hero Boy. That
he
is
he plays
perfect.
I think
that
eight
is
roles or something.
Yeah, he plays and it's a like Robert Zemeckis. I don't know. He kind of went a bit crazy with that. Good for him. At least he had a bit.
I think it'd be slightly problematic if you had Tom Hanks playing Hero Girl Holly, who is colored.
Yeah, that would have for me. That would have been the funniest thing.
But the Academy would have hated.
No,
it
I would
so
not
much.
Care because I would be like, That is hilarious. And that is, it's a shame that they didn't.
Yeah, but, so they have...
You know, they were scared at the time that mocap was going to, like, kind of how CG, like, took over hand-drawn animation. They were scared that mocapture was going to take over CG animation as well, which is...
Yeah, they have Marvin Gaye's daughter playing Hero Girl.
That is really random, but okay.
I mean, what's going on, guys? Fair enough. So, to wrap up our little... I don't know if we can really call it 500 Days of Summer because we went kind of all over the place.
I know, we were all over the place.
But rate 500 Days of Summer, I'm going to give it a 4.5.
I actually gave it a 4.5 as well. I don't think that's changed. It's just, it's weird.
It's really well done.
It's really well done.
Kind of movie, but I think it's an important movie.
And it's one of those movies where it's like, I really like, and it's kind of the same thing with like, I feel... whenever I watch like maybe like an Indiana Jones movie, I'm like, yeah, I really like this movie. It's one of the best movies I've seen in a while. It's weird that I don't go back to it. It's the same thing with like Deadpool Society. Yeah. I just don't see myself going back to it.
I do kind of like that it's one of those movies that you'll watch it, then you'll have an opinion on it.
Yeah.
And then you won't necessarily come back to it, but your opinion won't change.
Yeah, my opinion's never changed.
What I find
with
a lot of movies is that it kind of, how much I like the movie will drop off at some point where it just kind of,
Yeah,
like I'll think, oh wow, this is great, you know, top 4 Letterboxd, and then I'll end up like in a week thinking maybe it's really a 4.5 or like a 4.
That happened to me with a lot of movies. I watched Mars Attacks and it started off as a 7 out of 10 and it has gone down really fast. But yeah, this has been one of those movies where I actually do think about a lot,
and like, it's kind of always said, I think it's very thinkable movie.
Yeah.
You'd like zone out and start thinking about 500.
Yeah, I think about it a lot and it's like, and my opinion never changes on it. You know, it's been a year now and it's just like, I still really like this movie.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a solid movie.
You know, it's one of the best movies, new movies that I saw like last year. So,
4.5.
Yeah.
Any last?
No.
Thank you for listening to La Cosa Nostra. I've been Edward.
Been Noah.